No, I am. So, call the committee to order. Clerk will note the roll. And President Seifert approves approval of the minutes from the first meeting of the Rules Committee, with the exception of Bruce Anderson is noted on the minutes as being present and excused. And Representative Anderson, I believe you were excused. With that modification, great. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion for bill. Okay, members, we're going to hold off on the second item on the agenda of the legal fees. And now we're still waiting for some information on that. So we're going to move on to third item on the agenda, which is the resolution on the committee budgets. And members should have that before them, of the proposed House Committee and Minority Caucus budgets. We should note that essentially that the budgets that are proposed for the committees are reflective of the same as or the last buying in. There were some modifications because some committees were combined, for instance, and that sort of thing. Other than that, there are no changes, no increases. Representative Carlson.
Just to refresh my memory, how does the bottom line then compare with by any of you talked about?
Representative Carlson, we are up $1,000.
Mr. Chair, carefully perusing this list, I don't see anything on here for the liquor subcommittee of the Regulated Industries Committee. Hey, they're not giving liquor away. It's not free. We need a sample. We need to know what's going on.
Representative Hoppe, I believe that the Commerce Committee can allocate a portion of its budget if we would like to for you.
That would be excellent. I'll bring that up.
Any other discussion on the proposed budgets? Otherwise, if there are not, the Chair will move approval of the resolution on committee minority caucus budgets. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion fails. Resolution is adopted. Members, next on the agenda are some miscellaneous items, and we'll move first into the comp time policy, and Ms. Knight, if you could come forward. So members are aware the current comp time policy for the House is that employees will elect to use comp time over summer hours accrued at a rate of 1 hour for every 2 hours worked beyond 8 hours in a time period, for a pay period, for a maximum of 120 hours. This new policy, which is the same as that which was recently adopted by the Senate, would change some of the comp time processes so that there would be a maximum of 180 hours and it would only be a four-hour time period working after a pay period. But Ms. Knight, if you can explain it in details for members, and we'll take questions.
Members, as you will notify...
You can identify yourself. Okay. Okay.
Kelly Knight with House Administrative Services. Members, on page 2 of the comp time policy, you will note that the change that we are proposing is that on or after November 1st, that once a staff person works 4 hours over the minimum hours in the pay period, that they would accrue 1 hour of comp time for every 1.5 hours of additional work. Currently, they're required to work 8 hours over the minimum in the pay period, and the calculation is that they have to work 2 hours in order to accrue 1 hour of comp time. In addition, the other change would be that the maximum hours that could be accrued in the annual period would increase from 120 hours to 180 hours. And this is similar to the comp time policy that was just adopted by the Senate. In addition to that, one change that we are proposing is that any comp time that's accrued in the last pay period of the comp time year, so for us that would be the October 16th through 31 pay period, that any comp time accrued during that pay period would automatically roll into the following comp time year. Because currently, anything that's earned in that time period, staff wouldn't have an opportunity to use since the comp time period ends on October 31st.
Questions for Ms. Knight? Representative Krause.
Chairman, could you explain why
members, actually, we are talking about this beginning on November 1st, 2004. So it would retro back to the beginning of this comp time year, yes.
Representative Carlson. Any other further questions from Ms. Lynn? If not, the chair will move the approval of the comp time policy before us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
As opposed, motion prevails. This is adopted. Members, next on the miscellaneous items is the adoption of the Code of Conduct. Members, in House rules currently, it is required that the Rules Committee adopt a Code of Conduct for its members, officers, and employees. So this is a basically formality going forward, but I believe, Representative Carlson, if you'd like to speak to this, you may. The Code of Conduct, I think you're on the Ethics Committee, which I think adopted this recently, or if you'd like to move approval of the Code of Conduct, it'd be great.
It was unanimously adopted.
Code of Conduct is before us, Representative Sarah's discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and many Representative Carlson members. This was amended in Ethics Committee on line 15, if you look at it. And I can help you out if you don't remember. There was some deleted language after exercising sound judgment. Do you remember what language was deleted in the Ethics Committee on that?
Representative Carlson.
Chairman, I'd have to defer to this because I think it was.
Mr. Chair and members, the phrase related to deciding issues, so it was exercise sound judgment in deciding issues.
Mr. Chair, members, that we deleted by deciding issues based on their merits. So I'm glad we're getting rid of that sticky conduct situation. So this sounds like a good idea. No longer, we don't have to take merit into deciding, just use sound judgment. So as long as Representative Carlson's okay with that, I'll take that into it.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Crossman moves approval of the adoption of the Code of Conduct. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The Code of Conduct is adopted. Members, next before us is, on the miscellaneous items, is a reimbursement form for a former member. As members know, there is a 90-day period for turning in reimbursement for legislative activity. And unfortunately, we have, which has been the case over the past couple of years, this crops up periodically for whatever reason. Members or staff forget to submit expense reports. And that is the case for former member Lynn Osterman, who has submitted a request. And so that is before the committee. Chair will move approval of the expense reimbursement for former Representative Osterman. Any questions or discussion on that?
I don't really have a question about this situation, but what is the travel policy generally for class biennium, whether it's a question or an explanation? The reason I raised the question is not this reimbursement, because it's not authorized, and we're talking about different NDAs, but we did have a fairly strict travel policy. I know some of us in the minority caucus who do make requests, we're often told that fees will be paid to attend the conference, but we're not to travel and lodging. I remember having a conversation with Chair Blaise Haynes, and indicated that that was the way he was traveling. And I was talking to him about the financial conference, and he said that he would cover the fees if he went himself. But here we do have a situation where obviously travel is broader than that. And so I'm not free to argue about the fees here, other than just I think we have to have an understanding of what that policy is for this biennium, so that members of both caucuses are equally treated when they start buying attend the conferences and so on. And some are going to get traveling fees.
Right. Right, and Representative Carlson, we should be
I guess, to have that discussion, be upfront about it right now. And I know that we had this discussion a little bit in committee, I think it was last year, actually, and I think Speaker Sagan, Representative Osmond, and others had basically said that they were using their committee budgets for travel purposes for the minority as well as the majority. I think there's some discretion among the chair, and the speaker may comment, but I think he had even approved for some travel for the minority caucus last year. And Mr. Speaker, I don't know if you've given thought to a policy going forward in terms of fairness for the minority, but I'm sure that to avoid confusion and approval of this, to make sure that everyone is clear on what the travel policy will be for all members.
Mr. Chairman, members, I've over the last 2 or 3, 4 years, we've been somewhat restrictive on travel without question, just because of how strong the demand would be true. I think, in fact, too, that you represent the last travel authorization at this time for the last couple of days was to represent companies to go to the Great Lakes Commission. He chairs the Great Lakes Commission.
That's correct.
Authorize that. Generally speaking, the House has been, as Mr. Krause said, willing to pay for the fees, conference fees, the conference, whatever membership would be necessary. Other than that, to have the paid, travel paid and authorized for the House, there has to be some type of a participation. You're on a panel presenting. That's why I was looking at Representative Osterman's sheet here, which I see at times. This time I see that. I don't know when I signed it. How many come in after the fact? After the fact, travel has already been done. They come to my desk for authorization after it's already been done. But I don't see here where Representative Osterman was either presenting or on a panel or on a board or chairing a conference or chairing a committee. Usually that was a determining factor, Mr. Chairman, I was using this to whether the full coverage of the House would be covered as it would be. And I don't see that. So this one might be an exception to the rule you're presenting.
Getting interested in debating this particular one, I'm more interested in what the policy will be moving forward, because my meeting is to make sure that we have an understanding. And apparently, it sounds like there's a different policy in the committees and everything on as well. Well, maybe we just got the signal where we go get the signature.
Regarding the House budget, our House budget is extremely tight. We do have a significant carry forward. The governor has gathered his data, taken in his budget presentation. Our House budget is very, very tight. The carry forward calls it some $4 million. Over five million. We do have a significant carry forward at this point, but it's about ready to evaporate so we can expect right. The governor's recommendation comes forward.
Mr. Chairman, if you could identify yourself.
I'm Paul Spicer, House Controller. Yes, the governor's recommendation would eliminate the amount of carry forward that we had on the books at some point in time. I'm at over $4 million. When I said the $5 million, that was the amount that we started the biennium with, so there's a little difference there. We have spent some of it.
Any further questions? Discussions? Representative Osmond.
Just a technical error. On my copy, it says on the question, it says 6505. I think it should be 04. It looks like it wrote.
Representative Osmond, I'm sure that's correct. Actually, it should be 04. I'm sure Mr. Schweitzer will note that. There's no further discussion,
Mr. Chair.
Yep, Representative Sturge.
Mr. Chair, I think we now know how much it costs to be there, part in San Francisco, so that's good for all of us. But just a point of clarification to Speaker Stringham, I don't know on Representative Honey, And maybe you can answer this on the Great Lakes Commission. Does that come out of the House budget or is that the LCC budget for travel on that?
I think it was out of the House budget.
I'm
pretty sure it was the House budget.
Thanks. There's no further discussion. All right. The chair will renew his motion that the expense reimbursement for former Representative Lenoshi be approved. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Adopted. And with next we'll move on to the permanent rules of the House. And members may have a brief description in the document before, but what I'm going to do is that Representative Hoppe, I think, walked through some of the changes. He arranged the task force with some members of the majority. I think he's worked with Representative Keller, Representative Carlson, and others in terms of having some communication, in terms of where we were going with some changes in the rules and working together in a bipartisan fashion. And I think Representative Hoppe may refer some specific issues as well to counsel. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, it's important to remember I was sort of the compiler, not necessarily the expert on the rules. And I'd like to thank Lori Esau for all of her help and Deb and Mr. Marks and other people that helped. We'll just kind of run through it. Please stop me if we have any questions. Most of these are fairly minor changes. We'll start with Rule 1.21. Members can read the language. All we're doing is adding the speaker, the chief clerk, which has said already that we had to refer these to the speaker. Kind of a minor clarification. Rule 2.15, this is a technical rule that we've already been doing for the last year because we changed and we're no longer doing audio tapes, we're doing digital. This just changes the wording and rules. No changes in the way we do our proceedings will take place. It's just making the rules right. Here's the big one, Rule 4.03. The biggest part of this is that in an odd-numbered year, both the budget resolution and the limits resolution would be adopted on the House floor instead of in ways and means as has been the case in the recent past. And
Representative Carlson. Representative Carlson, maybe if Representative Hoppe can just finish up and then,
okay.
Then we'll come back and take questions on specific points.
And I'll take questions on any of it. With 4.03, we have staff here that will probably be able to answer more of the technical questions. We'll go real quickly, Rule 6.10. This is an ethics question. If a member, if there's an ethics charge that comes up in the last 2 weeks of session before we adjourn, the member's option is that he can waive the committee process and hear it on the House floor. Rule 6.20, committee deadlines set by the House by resolution. And 6.24, giving a chair discretion as to whether a witness needs to give their name and address. And this one was put in, I don't know if it would ever be used, but potentially it could be used if, for example, somebody was testifying about a stalker. We wouldn't necessarily want that person's address to become public record. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I will stand to questions.
Thank you, Representative Carlson.
Chairman, I wonder if you mentioned that staff can run this, and I don't know if that's in place to Marks or Mike, but I wonder if you could walk us through this. And the question I would have, first of all, would be things like what is the order when it hits the House floor? Are we going to deal with the overall target first and then the component parts? Or would be the flip side? Happen to be of the school of thought that former Governor Elmer Anderson had at the dealing with budgetary issues and needs. And that becomes a rather crucial question then when it's on the floor. If we find the need of individual areas in the budget, or if we are going to be defined by the overall number in terms of how we started to set. I'd like to have some comments on how it's going to work with the London.
Representative Carl, I know that Representative Knobloch offered to be present as well and answer some questions, because much of this is changing some of the authority that the Ways and Means Committee has had. So no longer will the Ways and Means Committee just be simply adopting these thresholds and these targets and the balance at the committee level, but it will be allowing the opportunity for all members on the floor to have a vote. So all members of the minority as well as the majority to have a vote on the floor on this. And I know Mr. Marks is here. Maybe Mr. Marks, if you can walk through the process and then maybe through that process maybe answer some of Carlson's questions and identify yourself from the tape.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson and members, just maybe a brief background on the process that's outlined in 4.03. In the odd-numbered year, this year, the major budget year, the budget resolution, and it's that process is outlined in paragraph D, starting on the last line of page 15 and then on to the next page. But within 20 days of a forecast, presumably February forecast is the plan is for February 28th of this year. So within 20 days of that, the Ways and Means Committee would have to report a resolution, a budget resolution to the floor. The budget resolution under this definition is the big overall number, the $29 billion, it's more refined than that, but largely that number. That would be reported to the floor and then acted on the floor. Then in paragraph D, in the odd-numbered year, within 14 days after the House has adopted the budget resolution, then the limits resolution, or the specific targets, would have to be reported to the floor. So it's the reverse order you were suggesting. It's the overall target first, overall number first, and then the individual targets would come later. I can explain the rest of this, or do you want to discuss this part?
Why don't you just explain the rest of how the process would work in terms of rejecting a proposed resolution?
Okay. And then, essentially, there are two resolutions that would have been adopted on the floor: one setting the overall number, one setting the individual targets. Then the process outlined in paragraph F is that after those resolutions are adopted, the Ways and Means Committee, if it found it necessary, could amend either of those resolutions. That amendment would be reported by the chair of the committee to the floor, presumably the day after the amendment takes place in the Ways and Means Committee. That notification would be printed in the journal, and then the following day, any member could make a motion to reject the action of the Ways and Means Committee. If that action is rejected, then the Ways and Means Amendment does not become effective. If no one makes a motion, or if the motion to reject it does not prevail, then the amendment made by the Ways and Means Committee would come into effect. That's briefly the process in the odd-numbered year. In the even-numbered year, both of the resolutions, as well as any amendments, would use the process that they are adopted in the Ways and Means Committee, reported to the floor, and the process they could be rejected by a vote on the floor. So that's essentially the process. There's language in here as far as a bonding bill. Are there? I have to find the section. I believe it's. Yes, in paragraph D, which is on the bottom of page 16 and the top of page 17, there's additional language that authorizes the Ways and Means Committee to set a limit, a total bonding limit for a bill. So with a bonding bill now, the language that's already in here on specific limits talks about a general fund target. The general fund target for a bonding bill is the debt service needed to fund bonds already issued by the state plus new bonds being authorized in that bill. In the odd-numbered year, in the even-numbered year, it'd be the difference from the forecast that would be a result of a bonding bill. But then plus any general fund expenditures in the bonding bill. And there are oftentimes some things that are in a bonding bill that can't be bonded for, that don't qualify for bonding. Examples with the governor's proposals this year would be taking over the zoo's debt service, for example, is a debt service that's already been incurred, and the state would, if this passes, would be just expending general fund money to do that. Oftentimes, relocation expenditures associated with a new building or a remodeled building are included in the bill, and that's one can't bond for that. That would be general fund expenditure. So the general fund target for the bonding bill is the sum of debt service plus any general fund expenditures. This would also authorize the committee to set a total bonding number for that bill, so there could be two targets for that particular bill. And it doesn't say specifically a bonding bill. It could be a transportation bill that authorizes trunk highway fund bonding also, for example, that it could include that. That would be a bonding authorization here. Leave that summarizes the changes. Mr. Chair, there is one other. There is language in paragraph H on the lower part of page 18 that would authorize the Committee on Ways and Means to adopt and report a resolution to the floor prior to the deadlines being required in here for regular resolutions. The language says if it's necessary to facilitate earlier action on those bills. That could be anticipating an early bonding bill, or could have been into relative to the deficiency bill that was acted on by the House earlier this session.
Representative Carlson.
Chairman, Mr. Marks, if a member wanted to include a project that hadn't been reported out of Ways and Means and didn't want to take it from another project, so you have to bring a motion up for someone to have to, on their behalf, in the Ways and Means Committee, to address your target before the bill hits the House floor. Is that what I understood you to say?
Mr. Marks. Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, if the result of that project, and presumably the result would be to increase the amount of bonding, yes, the resolutions would need to be amended to, as far as the one, or specifically the one dealing with the total authorization as far as bonding.
So the bill is considered Ways and Means, Chairman, and Ways and Means doesn't need, prior to the bill coming up on the House floor, then you have no other option than to take it from one project to move it into the project that would like to see move forward. It looks to me like this is pretty restrictive in terms of the opportunity to offer them. And, Mr. Chairman, how does time enter into that? Let's say you wanted to authorize a project and get to the next meeting. Which target is any of the second one?
Mr. Marks. Mr. Marks. Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I believe that any bonding authorized in any biennium would be part of the total bonding authorized in the bill, so that would still be limited. It would not be limited under the debt service, because the debt service wouldn't occur until the next biennium.
Other questions for Mr. Marks? Just search.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll serve on Ways and Means, so I'm kind of new to this. So what's being said here in bonding and then on the budget side is basically there's no amending the limits, which is the second resolution coming out of Ways and Means, or the bonding on the floor. All of that happens in the Ways and Means Committee? Or is that incorrect?
Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sturdy, the way this is set up, it would be initiated in the Ways and Means Committee. I believe, I imagine that a member could introduce a resolution on the floor, but that would get referred to Ways and Means, I suppose, and then would come back out through this process.
Any questions? Any other questions? Any other portion of the rules?
What the House is trying to do is not be restrictive and engage everybody and the member, all 134 members, in the opportunity to set the priorities and set the targets. I think that we've heard that from the minority. I think we've heard that from the majority, that all 134 members can be setting those targets, a little more for higher education, a little less for a cane plow, a little more for the environment, and a little less for whatever it may be. And that's the decision to make as a group. And it seems like this change is the advancing of every member's right to set that priority. Of course, with that enhancement comes some responsibilities, too. Hopefully, that means that after we agree as to what those targets are, there's some responsibilities that come in action in the form of support for the bills. And Representative Carlson, I don't see it being restrictive at all. I see it as being open, fair, honest, prudent, whatever, that if you're going to add a few million dollars to a spending bill, whether it be funding bill or whatever, you ought to be able to tell folks where it's coming from. And I don't see that as being restrictive. I see that as being honorable.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, the scenario that I outlined, the only way once those appropriations bills come through that a member of the body would be able to offer an amendment would increase the expenditures. Let's take transportation. I think that's very much up in the air in terms of how that's going to play out. Would be to get the adjustment made in the Ways and Means Committee. You're not providing an opportunity for all the members to engage in that discussion about raising the target once that target is set. That's one issue. And if a member wants to report, it comes out of Ways and Means. And you know how rapidly those bills are held up on the House floor. There's not any likelihood that the Ways and Means Committee will even meet to adjust the target. If you recall last biennium, when I used transportation as an example, the amendment to increase funding for transportation introduced by the IRS. So this is an issue that I think is of interest to every member, be they a Democrat or a Republican, in terms of the ability to influence the overall target and the specific targets that would come before the Minnesota House. And I think with what I heard Mr. Marks saying is that the restriction, and correct me if I'm wrong, is going to be in a given bill once those targets are, or within a given target. And I see the speaker shaking his head, yes. So the ability, like we at once had, where you could graph shift dollars from one area of the state budget to another area of the state budget is going to be restricted. For example, the division that I'm serving on, the Higher Ed Finance Committee, so the only way I can provide more money for the University of Minnesota would be to take it either from financial aid or means use system. Because that's not what we're essentially saying here, that we would be restricted to just moving within the three or four accounts for that position. The same would be true of all others. So I find it to be, Mr. Chairman, very restrictive. I wish Mr. Marks was correct me if I'm wrong in that interpretation.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, that's correct. A target set for the Higher Education Finance Authority limit would limit that bill. So, as you describe it, moving money within the bill would be okay. Moving money or to increase that bill beyond that limit would not be allowed under the resolution.
Or Mr.
President Carlson.
Increase the target. For example, the Ways and Means today, at least the members of that committee, which will recall, would get motions for the committee, both raised in a single motion the target, the overall target, as well as then increasing the target within a given bill. And we won't be able to do that. We wanted to extend it to refer back to Ways and Means. The argument that we're having more questions for this isn't the case.
I'm surprised we can look at these in different ways. Is it true that I have heard and other members have heard concerns in the last couple of few years that the targets were not set on the House floor? Not every member gets to vote on the targets and setting the monies between environment and ag and transportation and higher ed. That has been a concern, has it not been?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm talking about the ability to truly set those targets and make changes on the House floor. My argument isn't that the budget is set on the House floor. I don't argue that point at all. It's just that you put in additional language that makes it so restrictive that it's really kind of a myth that you can truly set them on the House floor. I think you're saying you can, and you really can't, because it goes back to my initial comment where you have as the first item of business the setting of the overall targets and everything is going to have to fit. If you want to change that, it reverts back to the Ways and Means Committee. So to say that every member is going to have the opportunity to change those targets when you're restricted to any changes within a given bill or within a given target, then that's what will be before us first, I find to be very restrictive. And I guess we can look at it different ways, but I'm not arguing about the fact that every member have an opportunity. I'd like to have the true opportunity to help set the budget, not a restricted opportunity.
Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Carlson's point, I think that what this rule change does is it allows members an opportunity, which we didn't have previously, to actually set those targets in the first instance. I'm not going to... you're right. If we're going to change the targets after they've been set, that has to be done through the Ways and Means process under the current rule. But what this change does is it allows every member to have an opportunity when we're setting those targets in the first instance. If I want to see more money going to higher ed, I can, as a member of the body, I can make that motion on the floor. The money's going to have to come from somewhere. You're right. We're going to set the overall target first. But as a member, I have the opportunity when it comes time to set those targets in the first instance. Changing them after they've been set, yeah, the Ways and Means process is in place under these rules. But the stated members don't have a say in setting the targets. I think he was incorrect. This is the way the rules are kind of different.
President Carson, to me, you're obviously being separate from Jack, which I don't know. If you want to put more on the higher education bill, I pose your question. Once the overall target is set, the targets are before us, how are you going to get more money into higher education under this scenario?
Jim Coles.
Hi. Mr. Chair, Representative Carson, I would move that we put more money in higher education and take it from somewhere else. We're going to set a budget target, an overall budget resolution, and then at a later time, we're going to set individual targets for the various bills. That's how the rule reads. I believe. Mr. Marks, please correct me if I'm wrong, but we set the budget target, and then after that, we set the budget resolution. After that, we set the targets for the individual bills, the individual areas. So if I want more money to go into higher ed, I have to make a decision, where is that money going to come from? Is it going to come from transportation or ag or the environment or jobs or state government finance? As a member, I have the ability to do that on House floor as these rules are drafted. Once those targets are set, if we want to change the targets, that's what the Ways and Means process does as the rules are drafted.
Further discussion. Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, there are a couple other changes in here in later paragraphs that I didn't cover, and they don't deal with setting the resolution so much, but I probably should mention those too. In paragraph J that starts on the bottom of page 18 and goes on to 19, there is language that would require or would define the major finance bills, and the one change here is that it would have a separate agricultural and rural development finance bill from the environment and natural resources finance bill. Paragraph K that starts on line 13 on page 19 removes this requirement that the Ways and Means Committee has to certify that bills are consistent with the resolution. The thought here is that when the Ways and Means Committee reports a bill out, that is already stating that it's consistent with the resolution. And to send this separate statement to the chief clerk and have it printed in the journal is really duplicating the effort of that the bill is reported out. It's consistent with the targets. Change in paragraph L on line 26 on page 19 removes some language referencing other finance bills that are reported out by committees having to fit within the resolution. And then the other change is in paragraph N on the middle of page 20. And this is, I just want to mention this one a little bit. This has been in the rules for a number of years, and it's a summary, requires a summary to be published of the fiscal effect of on the general fund of bills that have been referred to Ways and Means. And we've been providing this summary on the internet under the fiscal analysis staff webpage. I used to provide paper copies in places outside our office, and there was no demand for them. So my desire here was just to say make available so that it doesn't imply it has to be paper copies, that electronic copies are sufficient. So, those were the other changes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Marks. Any other questions on the proposed rules before us? I believe, Council, you have a recommendation for a change, too. Technical change?
Mr. Chair, thank you. We need a very small technical amendment, which I'd ask you to do orally when you move the rules. And this would be on page 32, line 36. Delete library and insert house controllers. This is in the area about, according to the committee of four proceedings, and we just have the wrong office stated here. So we need on page 32, line 36, delete library and insert house controllers.
And the chair will move adoption of the permanent rules of the House, and the chair will move, part of that motion, the change so noted by Council on page 32, line 36, deletion of library. Any other discussion on DM Rules 22 document before us? Seeing none, chair will move approval of the permanent rules, the DM Rules 22 document. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, the rules are adopted. Members, next on the agenda are the temporary joint rules of the Senate and the House. And as members may remember, the Senate passed some joint rules, or the temporary joint rules. They sent them over. I know the Senate is currently engaged in adopting permanent joint rules. But before us in committee today, we have the temporary joint rules. And chair will move adoption of the 105 document of the temporary joint rules. And I think there's an amendment for us as well. And I'm not sure whose amendment this is. Representative Kelleher. Representative Kelleher, if you'd like to move your...
I will move my amendment.
Rules 23 amendment and explain the amendment for members.
Mr. Chair and members, this amendment comes out of work done about 3 years ago on a joint rules task force that I believe from our side, Representative Junkie and I sat on, your side, Representative Olson, chaired with Senator Honinger, the committee. And we spent a wonderful summer meeting to go over possible changes to joint rules, and this is one item out of that that just gives us some definitions in terms of deadlines. And the language came out of that report and I think helps clarify what we mean by deadlines when we say them in terms of the two bodies. So it's just a clarification piece, and I'd appreciate your support today.
Discussion. Representative Abrams.
Chairman, I don't disagree with what Representative Keller is trying to do here, but I want to that if you amend the temporary joint rules or the joint rules, there is no process to have to read the differences. So you basically are sending the temporary joint rules back to the Senate. Either adopting it or not adopting it. And I don't think that members fully understand that. I'm really, maybe I'm the only one here who knows this, but I don't know how we can have a joint convention without a joint rules. I don't know how bills can be invoked without joint rules. I don't know how we can be conferences without joint rules. So, you know, as tempting a target as this may be for some members, I would really caution folks to exercise discretion when they start talking about changes to the joint rules, start offering amendments to the joint rules without knowing how the Senate is going to react, and perhaps spend a little bit of time thinking about the institution and what would happen if somebody started to raise some of the points I just raised on time before. So we're going to tell her, I support your amendment, but somehow some of the discussions about joint rules have taken on a life of its own, and I really do think that it's time for the body as a whole to take control of the situation from others who view this as an opportunity for some other agenda.
Representative Keller, I don't know if you've spoken with Senator Rask or others in the Senate, if they would be receptive if this motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, I can only control certain things about my conduct in the body, and I control those in my best ability. I cannot control the agenda of this committee, nor when this was taken up. I spoke to Senator Rask, I believe, probably 5 weeks ago about this amendment. I don't think she has a problem. I think she does have a concern that if this becomes fodder, there's an issue in terms of other rules, of course, and that's certainly not my intent here today, nor in the rule that we brought two rules forward from that joint task force that we thought were sensible and reasonable rules that I believe the Senate would accept. I cannot say that other people on any side of this body have other intentions to play games with the rules, but that is not my intent. So. And I believe, Mr. Chairman, if I could ask you a question, I know that you've met with Senator Rask, and you've had this rule change in your possession for quite a while. I don't know if you've discussed it, but I did discuss it 5 weeks ago, so maybe you've discussed it more recently.
And Representative Keller, I have not. I spoke with Senator Rask today regarding the joint convention, and the plan for the House on Thursday was to pass a resolution with a clause stating that we would be operating under the previous temporary joint rules, as Mr. Representative Abrams pointed out, on the advice of the chief clerk, since we have not adopted temporary joint rules yet. But perhaps, Representative Coles, you can comment if you've had discussions with Senator Rask, because I know you've been working on some joint rules efforts as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keller, I have a meeting scheduled with Senator Rask for Thursday afternoon prior to our floor session, so we're going to be getting together at least for half hour, hopefully for an hour of what I anticipate will be probably a handful of meetings over the course of the next couple of weeks as we move forward with a sincere attempt and effort to adopt permanent joint rules, which, as you know, haven't been adopted since 1999. I've been operating under temporary rules since. So certainly my intention and Senator's intention to move forward with this. We are meeting on Thursday afternoon.
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Keller, I'm going to support your motion, Representative Keller. I do think that it is a necessary clarifier. But I would hope that if something occurs on the floor on Thursday with the temporary joint rules, that there be bipartisan support against amendments and for these rules. Knowing that Representative Coles and Senator Rask are working on permanent joint rules, I would really, really suggest that because if anyone, 201 members, steps up on Wednesday next and says, what are the rules of this convention? The answer is, there are no rules. And the question is, can we elect regents without joint rules? I haven't really researched that question, but at least initially, I would have some problems with that. I would point out to members that it is in the Constitution of Minnesota that the House and the Senate shall adopt joint rules. So I guess what I'm asking the majority caucus, my caucus, and the minority caucus is, assuming that this one change is okay with the Senate, that we proceed bipartisanly on the temporary joint rules on Thursday, regardless of who has the agenda, either the majority caucus or the minority caucus. Because I'll tell you, this is, we have a problem on Wednesday. We're all going to look back, all 201 of us.
Representative Keller.
Mr. Chair and Representative Abrams, and I certainly would look to other members of this committee who are more wise than I am as to advice on how you would like to proceed. I mean, I see this as a helpful amendment to clarify the process, but certainly would not want to create a situation where we jeopardize an election for the Board of Regents by having this amendment on, or any then entertaining any other possible amendment. So I seek your advice.
Representative Amos.
I'll tell you, I don't have the joint rules in front of me, but one of the provisions of the joint rules is the process by which you elect regents and how you declare a winner. Because we've had some rather strange situations on the floor where more than one candidate could get a majority of the votes. You got a majority and you weren't elected. So there are in joint rules is how a regent is elected. So that's why it's critical that the House and the Senate act with identical temporary joint rules. I'm going to support your amendment, but I guess maybe I'm going to be kind of a lone wolf just given what sometimes happens on the floor. But I would really advise that we try to do this in a bipartisan fashion. Hopefully on Thursday, so the Senate has an opportunity to act, because I think we're going to uncharted territory if we don't have joint rules and we're holding an election for regions on our state.
And Representative Abrams and Representative Kelleher, I will support this amendment as well. I think it would be helpful if we just clarified with Representative Rest that there's, to Senator Rest that this certainly is non-controversial and that the Senate would hopefully adopt this because we are in a precarious situation. And it was originally my hope that we could just adopt the temporary joint rules. We kind of went into uncharted territory the first day of session with the temporary House rules and having a little more lengthy debate, and so that's why I wanted to make sure we cleared up any differences in the committee on the temporary joint rules. But I do know, and I would hope that members of both the majority and the minority know that it's my hope that we would have the permanent rules process moving forward so that members on both sides will have that opportunity for amendments and changes and sort of reignite the task force, if you will. Representative Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was just wondering, based on the fact that Representative Cole said he's going to be meeting with Senator Rest on the situation, if we wanted to have a wait on this particular thing and bring it up like Monday or something like that? Or are we in a situation where we have to get this done now?
Well, Representative Anderson, ideally, if we were hoping to adopt the temporary rules before the Regents meeting on Wednesday, we would need to pass these off the House floor on Thursday so that Senate would have an opportunity to act on them by Monday. We have a time between committee action today and Thursday on the House floor where we can remove this back off of the rules report if we really believe it's going to be a problem.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Discussion.
That caveat that if it would become problematic, I certainly would support going back into the Rules Committee and removing it in some way would jeopardize the process.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, the chair will Representative Kelleher's motion is before us. I'm sorry, the DM rules 22 document. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Members, now before us is the temporary joint rules document as amended. The 105 document. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. The rules are adopted. And members, we will take up adoption of the payment of legal fees at our next meeting. Thank you.